So this is the last of the new material that we're going to be covering for the exam. Well, this isn't the last of it. Monday is the last of it, but it's all nutrition. So we're going to continue nutrition on Monday and talk about cobalamin and folic acid, which are two specific nutrients, and also in general about antioxidants. So that'll finish our nutrition section. So yes, nutrition is on exam too. For some reason, this is not projecting writing all that clearly. I don't know why. But the whole first part, the first couple pages of your notes are basically definitions, kind of introduction to what nutrition is, and particularly nutrition as it relates to biochemistry. The difference between a macro and a micronutrient. A macronutrient is something big. Micro is small. Macronutrients will give us energy, the things we eat, proteins, carbohydrates, lipids. Micronutrients are the things we take or eat in very small quantities, like vitamins, minerals, trace elements, micro. Essential nutrient is a substance that's provided or needs to be provided for everyone at every age for health maintenance. And essential in biochemistry basically always means the same thing. And that is, it is a substance that the body cannot synthesize. So anything that is essential, an essential nutrient, an essential lipid, an essential amino acid, anything that's essential is something that the body cannot make. So therefore, you must ingest it. You must eat it. That's what essential means. So things that are essential are things like proteins, carbohydrates, lipids, that's for health maintenance and obviously for energy. Some vitamins, some minerals are essential. That's different than something that's desirable. Something that's desirable or something that benefits certain individuals, sometimes under certain conditions or certain things in pregnancy, folic acid, we will talk about that on Monday. Trauma, certain disease states in which requirements for things change. Things like fiber, antioxidants, omega-3 fatty acids, some or all of which you may use, are desirable but not essential for survival. Malnutrition, or bad nutrition, poor nutrition, basically has three forms. Obesity is a form of malnutrition. Nutritional imbalance is a type of malnutrition. And undernutrition is a type of malnutrition. Obesity is considered malnutrition, and its definition is caloric intake in excess of expenditure. And it's considered bad because it contributes to risks and diseases and problems such as cardiovascular disease, hypertension, diabetes. Many diseases come from obesity. So it is a state that is considered bad, nutrition-wise. An imbalance, that's overconsumption, usually of one or more nutrients. Sometimes people go crazy and hear things in the media or in other places, and they start grossly over-consuming certain things, like certain vitamins. That can be bad. Sometimes it kills people. Usually when that happens, that also is in the media, and then the FDA says something, and things get pulled from the shelf. But any kind of imbalance where you overdo something is also bad. Undernutrition is the one you always think of when you think of malnutrition. And there's actually two types of undernutrition. It's not quite as simple as just starvation. There's a protein-calorie malnutrition, and that means basically inadequate food, period. Inadequate nourishment. Risk for that is obvious starvation. There's also another type of undernutrition called quasi-poor, and that affects many third world countries, and it's a diet with a very low protein-energy ratio. So it's people that eat mainly corn and rice, and that's what they live on. So they don't get any protein. There's no other nutrients in their diet. And they can survive, if you will, on that, but they don't thrive and they don't develop properly. So they don't starve to death, but they also are not normal. So it affects a lot of third world countries. Of course, both of these are really found mostly in third world countries. Macronutrients, we've already looked at these in some detail, and we will continue to because they also happen to be the top four of our biomolecules. And carbohydrates are big. They're the major energy source for most of the world's population. Remember, they're composed of carbon, hydrogen, and oxygen, and they provide 4 kcal of energy per gram of carbohydrates. There's two types of carbohydrates, some that are available to us for energy and some that are called unavailable. Available carbohydrates, which are the ones we get energy from that feed the world, are things like starch and glycogen. In our diet, in the human diet, starch, sucrose, which is table sugar, and lactose, which is milk sugar, are the most abundant and readily available dietary carbohydrates. The starches, bread, potatoes, pasta, those are available carbohydrates. We use them for energy. And again, we get 4 kcal of energy per gram. Unavailable carbohydrates are really what we think of as fiber. So they're carbohydrates that we eat, but we can't digest them to get energy. Cellulose, lignin, pectin, all those resist digestion. They are good for you, desirable in some quantity, but they do not provide energy. So they're unavailable to give us energy. That's why we call them unavailable. Proteins, we just finished talking a lot about proteins. We're going to continue to do that. Enzymes or proteins, talked a lot about enzymes. We eat proteins and we get, again, 4 kcal per gram of energy. So notice you get the same energy from protein as you do from carbohydrates. Proteins are essential to us because they provide what's called the essential amino acids. And again, there's the word essential again. So when you eat protein, it provides the amino acids which your body cannot synthesize. You see in your notes a list of these amino acids. You do not need to memorize which amino acids are essential. But notice arginine, histidine, isoleucine, leucine, lysine, methionine, phenylalanine, threonine, tryptophan, and valine are all amino acids your body cannot synthesize. So you have to eat those. You have to get those through ingesting proteins. Non-essential amino acids, which is the rest of the 20 natural amino acids, can be synthesized by the body. And next semester we will look at the synthesis of the rest of the 20 natural amino acids. So an ideal protein is pretty much as it would seem. It has an amino acid composition that gives you all of those essential amino acids. Biological value. An ideal protein is ideal because it has all the amino acids. But a protein that is ideal and with good biological value is also one that can be digested successfully so that those amino acids can go into the pools where they need to go and be available for the body to use. So you want to have an ideal protein, one with all of the essential amino acids that's also easily digested, which of course is a role for the serine proteases. They digest proteins. Remember we talked about that. Chymotrypsin, tryptophan, and elastase. They digest proteins. They're also part of the blood coagulation system. So carbohydrates and proteins, 4 kcal per gram. Lipids, fats, primarily carbon and hydrogen. They are stored in our bodies as triglycerols, and they're the big energy providers. Notice 9 kcal per gram, so more than double what protein and carbohydrates give us. So about 95 to 98% of what we eat is stored in our adipose cells as triglycerides. Basically, we do not have enough activity to eat a lot of fat. We do not need to consume a lot of fat. Eskimos consume a lot of fat. They don't have problems, the problems that we tend to have with heart disease and other things, because they use it. So just simply using logic and looking at how much energy is provided by fat, you're going to have to expend a lot of energy to eat a lot of fat. So if you don't do a whole lot, then if you eat a lot of fat, you are going to have problems with that. You're going to store too much. You're going to have too much in your blood. And you're going to gain weight because your body is not going to use the energy. So fat, 9 kcal, lots of energy. if you're going to use the energy. Fatso lipids, we eat a small amount. Most of them are synthesized from diacylglycerols. We talked about that. Important parts of membranes. Cholesterol, the sterol, always goes in with lipids. It is synthesized primarily from the body. You get some from food, but greater than 75% of cholesterol your body actually makes because it is so vital to your survival. All of your steroid hormones and some other hormones, sex steroid hormones, come from cholesterol. It's also found in most membranes. Fatty acids come in both forms, essential and non-essential, just like amino acids. And the non-essential ones, again, are made by the body, so not something that we need to eat. They can be saturated or unsaturated. And we talked about this a bit. The animal fats or animal lipids are high in saturated type fatty acids, whereas plants, like olive and canola, are higher in unsaturated fatty acids. Trans fatty acids, hydrogenated oils, things you see in processed foods, are unsaturated fatty acids that have been saturated. And again, the reason you find them is because they extend shelf life. They're not healthy, really not good to eat, but the companies use them because it makes the fat last longer on the shelf. You find them in things like Pop-Tarts and stuff like that. You know, those things will survive a nuclear disaster, basically. So, trans fatty acids, not that good for you. There are only three essential fatty acids, linoleic, linolenic, and arachidonic. The structures are on your notes. You don't need to know the structures, but you should know the names. There are only three, not too hard. Linoleic, linolenic, arachidonic. Those are essential. You have to get them from food. Arachidonic, you're going to see, is very important next semester. It is the precursor, the starting material for synthesizing cholesterol, arachidonic acid. Also, linolenic and linoleic can also lead to synthesis of cholesterol and also prostaglandins and many vital substances. So these are essential. You have to get these from food. So you can't go entirely, or it's not good to go entirely without fat. And you do need these three essentials. As a note, and again, this is not important necessarily to remember, but the body cannot synthesize fatty acids that have double bonds after carbon number 9. So it's kind of interesting to see that all three of these compounds, as you look at the numbering, if you find the little 9 on there, that's carbon number 9. Notice they have double bonds that come after carbon number 9. The body can't synthesize those. And again, synthesis of lipids we will look at in detail next semester, and that is why these are essential. The body can't make things that have unsaturated and past carbon number 9. Omega-3 fatty acids, those are found in what's called desirable nutrients. Lots of people take them. You can buy them in capsule form at Trader Joe's or wherever. They're in deep cold water fish oil, and they've been found to be related to decreased risk of certain diseases, particularly coronary artery disease and some cancers. So people are big into omega-3 fatty acids. And they are just basically fatty acids that look similar to our fatty acids here, linoleic, linolenic, arachidonic, the three essentials. So desirable for some people. That's fine. Alcohol. I add alcohol as a food group. Usually you do not see it included as a food group. You will see in a minute why I include it as a food group. If you look down past these reactions, which we'll come back to, notice ethanol, alcohol, margaritas, wine, everything, beer, burns 7 kcals per gram of energy. That's a lot. That's almost up there with fat. So you can guess what happens if you consume ethanol in excess of your daily caloric usage. You get fat. So alcohol is something to think about, because usually people do not just drink alcohol, they drink the margarita with the big meal. So that's in excess. Notice all of that energy. Those three reactions, if you, of course, do not memorize those at all, but notice you start with ethanol, simple molecule, seen it in the lab, that's what you're doing, becomes acetyl-CoA. All of this has to go on in the liver. Very stressful. The liver has to oxidize all ethanol that you ingest. So ethanol is unique because of all of its different properties, which we all know. It furnishes a lot of calories, and it's very stressful on your liver because your liver has to oxidize all that ethanol. If you do get to the point where you are drinking more ethanol than you're eating food, so it's greater than 50% of the calories that you ingest, you are usually considered an alcoholic. At that point, everything kind of changes, and you no longer gain weight from it, but you suffer from weight loss, you suffer from malnutrition, basically deficiencies of vitamins, and of course your liver then starts to become greatly affected and dysfunctional liver, because it's so stressed by having to go through all of this oxidation. So ethanol is something to think about because it's part of everyone's lives, and most everyone. And notice again the calories that it provides. So mainly you have to be careful because it will make you fat. Here's a list of the important micronutrients. We're going to leave macro now. So remember, macro was carbohydrates, protein, 4 kcal per gram, lipids, 9 kcal per gram, alcohol, 7 kcal per gram, 4 macronutrients, all things we eat. Think of them as big, because we can obviously see them, hold them, taste them, and eat them. The micro, the small ones, are the vitamins. And these are the 9 essential water-soluble vitamins. This is a very important table. You need to know what's going on in this table. Vitamins, niacin, thiamine, riboflavin, pantothenic acid, the pyridoxals, which are the B6 vitamins, biotin, cobalamin, which is vitamin B12, folic acid, and ascorbic acid. These are all water-soluble vitamins. Listed are their biochemical or physiological functions, and some of them also become coenzymes, and we're going to emphasize some of those here in a few minutes. Niacin is what becomes NAD, NADH. That's going to be really important in the carbohydrate metabolic pathway. Niacin becomes a coenzyme, which we call NADH, NAD+. We're going to see that in a few minutes. It is involved in oxidation reductions, electron transfer reactions. Electron transfer reactions. Notice the RDA is milligrams, fairly large milligram quantities, not difficult to get. Particularly in this country, a lot of things are enriched with the B vitamins, bread, cereals, etc. Thiamine makes a coenzyme called TCP. It's involved in oxidative decarboxylation reactions required in milligram quantities. Riboflavin, vitamin B2, is what gives you FAD, FADH2, very important coenzyme in the carbohydrate metabolic pathway. Also produces FMM, flavoprotein, involved in the electron transport chain we'll see at the very end. Again, it's riboflavin, FAD, FADH2, involved in oxidation reduction, electron transfer, milligram quantities required. Pantothenic acid is what makes coenzyme A. We're going to talk a lot about coenzyme A. Involved in acyl transfer, and again, it's needed in milligram quantities. The pyridoxals are the vitamin B6s, and they make pyridoxal phosphate. That's an important coenzyme, which we will see. It's involved in 3 types of biological reactions. Transamination, moving amino groups around, decarboxylation, and phosphorylation. Again, milligram quantity. Biotin does not form a coenzyme, but it's involved in CO2 transfer reactions, so moving carboxyl groups around. Notice now it's in microgram quantities. Cobalamin, very complex molecule. We're going to look at that on Monday. Methyl cobalamin, very interesting structure. It's involved in a specific and very important reaction, which is the methylation of homocysteine, microgram quantities. Folic acid doesn't concern most people, but pregnant women, very important. We're going to talk about folic acid on Monday. It's involved in moving methyl groups around, one carbon transfer. For most people, you only need folic acid in microgram quantity. Ascorbic acid, made famous by scientist Linus Pauling, who won a Nobel Prize for his work. It is an antioxidant. We'll talk about what free radicals it scavenges and why antioxidants are important on Monday. Notice that it is needed, thought to be needed, required RDA in milligram quantities. Milligram quantities. Now you've got some structures here that you don't need to memorize, kind of interesting just to look at. There's the structure of pantothenic acid, which forms coenzyme A. We'll see the structure of coenzyme A later in the course, which you again won't have to memorize. Biotin. There's the structure of what biotin looks like. Thiamine, that's in fact phorylated, makes CDP, important coenzyme. So just an idea to look, the vitamins are organic molecules, rather complex ones, containing mainly carbon, hydrogen, oxygen, some sulfur. So again, just nothing to panic about, you don't have to draw them. Just kind of interesting to see what they look like as things you eat and ingest. There are a couple that we're going to focus on. I believe it's three. The first is niacin. We're going to focus on niacin, thiamine, and the pyridoxals because they're important for carbohydrate and nitrogen metabolism. Niacin, riboflavin, and the pyridoxals. Water-soluble. They come off the table that we just looked at. So starting with niacin, niacin is important because it becomes the coenzyme known as NAD+ and NADH, also NADC+, which is the same as NAD, but with a phosphate. This big picture here, again, is not something you need to worry about or memorize. I put it here because I want you to notice the structure of niacin, how small it is, nicotinic acid, just a little ring with the nitrogen in it, carboxylic acid, and a group. And down here, this is NAD+, this whole thing. So it's interesting to note how structurally complex the electron carrier, the coenzyme, is. Not sure why that happens, because in a minute we'll see that the structural complexity is not really involved in the enzyme or in the functioning as an electron carrier, but it adds a lot of groups. So it adds some ribose rings, phosphate groups, adds adenine. If we add ribonucleotides to itself, that makes itself very, very complex. So you start with the vitamin, very simple little organic structure, molecule, and it gets very complex. And again, you don't need to memorize the structure, just notice the complexity. How it works as an electron carrier, though, is important. And as how it works as an electron carrier is actually all back on the basic first structure that we saw of the vitamin. And so basically in your picture here, you have the vitamin, niacin, and then remember we attached all this stuff. We attached a couple ribose rings, we attached the ribonucleotide, we attached some phosphate. We attached all that to make NAD+, the coenzyme. But in terms of carrying electrons, it all happens on this top carbon right here. So basically in going from this structure to this structure, you notice we're picking up electrons in the form of a hydride ion. We go back this way, we're giving them up. So basically, NAD+ functions to pick up electrons in the form of hydride, and that makes NADH. NADH can also donate back those electrons in the form of a hydride and give you an NAD+. So again, this is a coenzyme, an organic cofactor, a coenzyme. Remember, the cofactor, the coenzyme, the organic coenzyme, is involved with the enzyme, and it has to be there for the enzyme to be fully functioning. So we're talking about cofactors in enzymes. We're going to see lots and lots of enzymes in the carbohydrate metabolic pathways that use NAD+ and NADH. And they're always going to be involved in oxidation reduction. So anytime you're doing an oxidation or a reduction where you've got electrons moving around in the form of hydride ions, you will have an NAD+ going to an NADH or an NADH going to an NAD+. So you should know where on the molecule, this electron transfer is happening. And basically you'll notice that the molecule is set up well for the electron transfer because of the aromaticity, so these electrons can move around. The nitrogen has the ability to pick up that lone pair. So notice the chemistry that's going on there in the electron transfer. Yeah? No. It can go both ways. Key metabolic pathways that this enzyme participates in. Glycolysis, we're going to see that. Citric acid cycle, we're going to see that. The respiratory chain, we're going to see that. Amino acid metabolism, we will actually see next semester. So we will find it in all of those pathways. And again, anytime you have a biological oxidation or reduction, you're going to see something like an NAD plus and NADH around. And here's the overall equation, what's happening. Dietary source, very easy to find niacin, at least in this country, most animal plant foods have it, generally not a problem. It turns out that niacin, or NAD plus, the coenzyme, can be made from an amino acid, and the amino acid is tryptophan. Not too surprising if you look at the structure of tryptophan. Tryptophan can be converted to NAD plus. So if niacin is lacking for whatever reason, your body can use tryptophan to produce NAD plus. Gives you an idea because there's another pathway, another way to get NAD plus, the importance of NAD plus and NADH in metabolic pathways. You basically would not be able to metabolize carbohydrates without NADH and NAD plus. Yeah. No, it's not really to do with this part of it. So niacin, N, niacin, NAD plus, NAD8. The next one is riboflavin. Here's the vitamin. Again, you do not need to get too wrapped up in the structure of the vitamin other than kind of interesting. It makes the coenzyme, which again you will note increases in complexity, FAD and FADH2. FAD and FADH2. How does it work as an electron carrier? That part's important. The R group is basically most of the structure that you see here. The only part of the coenzyme, all of this is just kind of baggage, that's involved in the actual electron transfer, oxidation reduction, is the flavin molecule. This three-ring structure looks a little bit like anthracene with a lot of nitrogen in it. So this is FAD. And this is FADH2. Notice, again, what FAD does is it has the ability to transfer electrons in the form of hydride ions. It's different than NAD in the fact that it can do two at the same time. So FAD goes to FADH2. And it's those nitrogens in the flavin ring that actually pick up and move electrons. Basically, they oxidize and reduce. Yeah, it could have a...
What happened to the ring?
Yeah. Oxygen doesn't have anything to do with it. It's just the nitrogen's in the ring. Again, similar to NAD, it's the nitrogen and nitrogen's ability to hold a pair of electrons, which is similar again to histidine, as we saw in the catalytic triad. It is a donor and acceptor of protons. The nitrogens work the same way in the coenzymes. So it's the flavin part of the molecule and those nitrogens where we're actually getting the oxidation reduction. So remember, this is part of an enzyme. It's a cofactor, an organic coenzyme vitamin. And it's where the electron transfer for oxidation reduction reactions is going to go on. So we're going to see NAD plus, NADH, and FAD, FADH2 in pretty much every oxidation reduction reaction that we see. We will see one or the other as an electron carrier. You need to know where the electron transfer occurs, yeah. To understand that part of the chemistry. Remember, we're going to see NAD in glycolysis, citric acid cycle, respiratory chain, amino acid deamination. The pathways that are specific to FADH2 will be the citric acid cycle again. It'll be heavily involved in fatty acid oxidation, the pathway we'll see next semester, purine degradation, and amino acid deamination. So it's got four key metabolic pathways, as does niacin. So this is what happens with riboflavin, the vitamin riboflavin. The other is the vitamin niacin. Both water-soluble vitamins, both important cofactors falling under the subgroup organic cofactor coenzymes. Coenzymes. These are key for carbohydrate pathways. We will see them again. And again, the big structure, the coenzyme, where we go from the vitamin to the coenzyme, just appreciate that it gets much more complex. Not entirely sure why its complexity increases so much. There's one, let's see, what are we say? Okay. Key metabolic pathways. Dietary sources, again, pretty easy to find. Yeast, liver, kidney, most bread, cereals are fortified with riboflavin. There's no metabolic sources for mammals, so we can't make riboflavin from an amino acid like we can NADH and NAD+. That can be made from tryptophan. No metabolic sources of FAD. The pyridoxals, the B6 vitamin, is actually three forms: pyridoxine, pyridoxal, pyridoxamine. The names kind of tell you a bit about the structure. Pyridoxine has basically just a hydroxyl group up here, carbon number 4. Pyridoxal, it's become an aldehyde. Pyridoxamine, become an amine. The coenzyme is not actually too much more complex than the vitamin. The coenzyme involves putting just a phosphate group on carbon number 5. They haven't done too much complexity. That's the pyridoxal phosphate. They're basically involved in transaminations and decarboxylations. And I gave you a scheme of a typical transamination reaction. Again, not something that you want to memorize at all. So to remember that the pyridoxals, pyridoxine, pyridoxal, pyridoxamine, again, are cofactors, organic cofactors, subgroup, coenzymes. So it's part of an enzyme. It will be part of an enzyme that is involved in catalyzing a transamination reaction. And if you kind of look through this, you can see basically what a transamination is. It's pretty much what you would think. It's transferring an amino group from one molecule to another. So you do not need to know this pathway at all. Just take a look at it as an example of what a transamination is and something that the pyridoxals would be involved in. Transaminations, decarboxylations. We will see them briefly in glycogenolysis as well. That is a pathway having to do with glycogen. Glycogen is how we store glucose. And we're going to look at when glucose levels are high, We go through glycogenesis, we create glycogen. We also see glycogenolysis, and we see the pyridoxal involved as coenzymes in that pathway. And again, that'll be the breakdown, the lysis of glycogen. So we will see this, the pyridoxals again. Dietary sources, meat, grains, again, most bread, cereals are fortified with the B6 vitamins, nuts, fairly easy to get, difficult to have a shortage of the B6 vitamins. This is an overview picture of the metabolic pathways and where the water-soluble vitamins come into those pathways. You do not need to memorize this picture. It's given to you so you can see an example that the non-water-soluble vitamins from the table, which is important, because remember the table gives you whether they become a coenzyme, what types of biological or physiological reactions they're involved in, and in general their RDA, whether it's milligram or microgram quantity. This is the 9, again, in all the various pathways that they're involved in. So it gives you an idea, first of the pathways, and we will see these again. Again, there's glycogen, so that's how we store glucose 6-phosphate going to and from glycogen. Lactate comes from pyruvate, going from glucose through glucose 6-phosphate to pyruvate. That's glycolysis. We will see that pathway. Glucose 6-phosphate used in synthesis of nucleic acids. Amino acids become peptides and proteins. Nucleic acids, they become acetyl-CoA and also pyruvate. Fatty acids are stored as triglycerides. They're very important in the synthesis of acetyl-CoA, and acetyl-CoA is important in the synthesis of fatty acids. Ketone pathways, all of these metabolic pathways, you can see all of 9 of those water-soluble vitamins coming into play in one or more of those pathways. And again, the way that they will be used, because they're vitamins, water-soluble vitamins, is as organic cofactors for enzymes. And under organic cofactor, remember there's a specific type called the coenzyme, which is different than the prosthetic group. The heme group was the prosthetic group. So again, the importance is to understand how NAD plus, NADH work as oxidizers, reductants. How do they carry electrons? What part of the molecule? You need to understand that part of the chemistry. There is a vitamin source for NADH, NAD plus, tryptophan. The 4 key pathways, know those for NADH, NAD plus. And of course, you need to know. So we're talking about niacin as the original vitamin becomes much more complex when it becomes a coenzyme. Riboflavin, which becomes the coenzyme, FAD and FADH2, understand the electron carrying part of the molecule. And again, it's involved because it's an electron carrier in oxidizing and reducing things biologically, so it will be tied up with enzymes that are involved in oxidation reduction. You'll see lots of those. Lots of those in the citric acid cycle, particularly. The pyridoxals are involved in glycogenolysis, and they're also involved in reactions that involve moving amino groups, transaminations, and decarboxylations. The B6 vitamin. Their coenzyme form is not much more complex than the vitamin. It just involves adding a phosphate group. Again, there's 3 forms of the vitamin B6. Pyridoxin, pyridoxal, pyridoxamine. So the 9 water-soluble vitamins table is important. We're going to talk about the absorption and transport of water-soluble vitamins on Monday, which are very different than the fat-soluble vitamins, which we will begin to mention also on Monday. So we're going to continue nutrition on Monday and talk about cobalamin, folic acid, and antioxidants. That's